It's going to be Luke 8. We're going to be in verses 22 through 25. So a little bit smaller section today, but I think God has a big message for us coming out of this morning, okay? All right, so let's go ahead and just address the elephant in the room. Yes, I got my hair cut this week. Thank you for noticing. I appreciate that. I did fracture my ankle this past week. Courtney finally had enough, and she was like, that's it. And she put me down, and so here we are. No, she wouldn't do that. But I was playing basketball last Sunday night, and I was trying to guard somebody 20 years younger than me. And so this is what happens when you get old. And so I went up to try to block the shot, I come down, and I landed on my ankle weird, and I fell. And as soon as I hit the ground, I knew that it was more than just a sprain. I've done that several times throughout my life, and this pain was next level compared to that. And so as I'm laying there on the ground, writhing in pain, I started to process all the ways that this was going to ruin my life, especially for the next 6 weeks, because we have a ton of things coming up. I started coaching basketball this last week, right after this happened. I am officiating a wedding next week. We have our baptism service the week after that, and then the week after that, I'm supposed to be going out of town to preach and help lead a church planting conference. And on top of that, I have to climb up on the stage every week and preach to you fine people. So, lots of stuff going on, and I'm sitting here going like, God, why would you do this? Like, this is not the time. I don't know if you saw the calendar recently, but this was not the time for this to happen. And I have way too much going on to be slowed down by a broken ankle. And then my beautiful wife said, well, you know, maybe you need to ask God what he wants you to learn during this time and through this. Maybe he has a purpose in this for you. And she took the spiritual road on me, of course. And so she's right. And as much as I hate it, this big boot on my foot was no surprise to God. Not at all. And in fact, it was all part of his plan. Why? I don't know yet. But I know that it was. And so I'm praying for him to powerfully heal me, but also believing that he has a good purpose in it. I think it's also no coincidence that this week's passage is on the providence of God. Always be careful what you preach, because God has a way to bring it to bear on your life in those moments. This has happened to me numerous times throughout my life and my preaching career, and so that's true today. And so we're going to look at this, the providence of God today, in this way. Here's the big idea. Faith means trusting God's plan as much as his power. Trusting God's plan as much as his power. So let's go ahead and read the scriptures, and then we'll dive in together. I'm going to read the whole section here. Verse 22 says, one day he got into a boat with his disciples, and he said to them, let us go across to the other side of the lake. So they set out, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filling with water and were in danger. And they went and they woke him, saying, Master, Master, we are perishing. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. And he said to them, where is your faith? And they were afraid, and they marveled, saying to one another, who then is this that he commands even the winds and water, and they obey him? Three things this morning we're going to see about God's providence. Number one, God's plan will call me to go through storms. God's plan will call me to go through storms in my life. Notice the first thing I want you to see right off the bat here, look what he says. It says, he said to them, Jesus said to the disciples, let us go across the lake. So right off the bat, we must notice and recognize here that this whole experience, this whole episode that's about to happen here, was Jesus' plan from the start. Right? This wasn't an accident. This wasn't happenstance. It wasn't even like the disciples had this idea and he just kind of let it play out. This was Jesus' idea. This was his purposeful plan all along, was to take them across this lake and into this storm. And this is true for every single thing that we experience in life. There is no such thing as fate or coincidence or luck. That's all the world's words trying to explain the things that they don't understand. But God always understands. He has everything in this world is under and part of God's ultimate plan and purposes. We see it here even in the comment of Jesus. Look what he says. He says, let us go to the other side. So this was not some aimless, you know, boating outing on the lake. It wasn't like they were just kind of just floating around out there doing whatever. He had a plan. He had a direction. He had a purpose, a destination for the journey. He was leading them somewhere. And as they go across the lake, it says, then a windstorm came down on the lake. Another translation says a whirlwind came, and it certainly was. The lake that's being referred to here is the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee is a very low elevation, and it's surrounded, it's kind of nestled in all these mountains and hills. And so it's not an uncommon occurrence for a wind to come off the edge of the cliff and come down onto the lake and cause a giant storm to just pop up out of nowhere. But this particular storm was so intense and so severe that the waves were crashing over the side of the boat and filling it with water, we're told. In fact, it was so tumultuous that Luke tells us right here that the disciples were in real danger. There's legitimate danger here for them in this storm. And you know that has to be true because in this group of 12, 13 men, several of them were experienced fishermen on this lake. And so for them to say, like, hey, this is not going well, that tells us how intense and legit this storm really was. Jesus had led them right into a severe, overwhelming, life-threatening storm. And I think it's easy to say they were surprised, right? They were caught off guard. This is surely not what they expected. But it was not a surprise to Jesus. Not in the least. This was part of his plan. And I think this is a really fitting picture for our lives in many ways. We tend to always think of storms as surprises, don't we? When a storm comes into our life, aren't we always surprised by that? We're like, where did this come from? Like, what's happening? Because for us, they are unexpected deviations from the plan. A lot of times we see them even as mistakes, right? Like, man, this shouldn't have happened. This wasn't the way it was supposed to go. It wasn't supposed to happen like this. What are you doing, God? I thought you were supposed to love me. I thought you were supposed to protect me. I thought you were supposed to, you know, make sure that everything was great in my life. What is this? But Jesus is actually looking on and saying, actually, yeah, this is exactly how it was supposed to go. And this is all part of my perfect plan for your life. In the church world theology, we call this providence. That's the church word for it here, right? Providence is the perfect plan of God to achieve his ultimate purposes. The perfect plan of God to achieve his ultimate purposes. And his providence, it extends over everything. Let me give you some verses here to back that up. Isaiah 46:10 says, I declare the end from the beginning and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will accomplish all my purpose. New Testament, Ephesians 1:11. In him we have obtained an inheritance, having been predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his will. All things according to the counsel of his will, his purposes. Proverbs 16:33 says, the lot is cast into the lap, but it's every decision is from the Lord. Everything in our lives, everything in this world is either caused by God or allowed by God in accordance with his divine plan and his purposes. That's the message of Scripture. Now, on one hand, that can be a great comfort and assurance to us, can it? That our good and perfect God is in control of all things. That should be great comfort to us. But on the other hand, when storms come swooping down onto our lives, the reality of God's providence can be a hard pill to swallow. Because all of a sudden we have some hard questions, don't we? How could God do this to me? Why would God make me walk through such pain and misery in my life? Why would he put me or my family or my career or my dreams or whatever in such danger in this situation? Why would he allow something that is so terrible to come into my life? This doesn't seem good to me at all. And the ultimate answer to all of those questions is simply for the sake of his perfect plan and purposes. And that doesn't always help our heart in the moment, but it's the truth. And in those moments where we can't see any sunlight coming through the storm, we must remember who he is. Just as he purposes to take you into the storm, he also purposes to bring you through the storm, and having accomplished a greater purpose in the storm. As I was thinking about all this week, God reminded me of a storm that he took Courtney and I through early on in our marriage. We had just started trying to have kids, and we had some complications early on and couldn't conceive, and so we struggled through that for several months. I know some of you have experienced that as well. You know what I'm talking about there, but we eventually did. We're able to conceive, and so we were super excited finally that we were going to have a new baby. But a number of weeks or months after that, I was out of town 1 week on business, and I got a call that Courtney had started bleeding and needed to go to the hospital. And when she got there, wow, I didn't expect that. The doctors confirmed what was already expected, which was she had a miscarriage and lost the baby. And it was heartbreaking for both of us, and we cried and mourned and suffered together through that loss. And again, I know many of you have experienced the same thing. You know what I'm talking about. Or maybe you haven't experienced that, but you've experienced something, right? You've had some health crisis. You've had some addiction in your past. You've had some broken family relationships that you've had to walk through, or some big financial downfall. You've had something. You've had some storm in your life that broke you. And I think some of you are probably in a storm like that right now. And you're just fighting like crazy to keep the boat afloat, and you're just bailing water. And you're questioning why God has done this to you. How he could let this happen in your life. And I get that. I've been there too. We've been there. It was a very dark storm for us, for sure. But by his grace, we were already scheduled to lead worship at our church that Sunday. And I had planned a new song for our church that Sunday, and the lyrics went like this. Defender of this heart, you loved me from the start. you never change. Through the highs and lows, as seasons come and go, you never fail. Day after day, your love will remain faithful and true. You are good. You are God with us. You're victorious. You are strong and mighty to save. For your word stands true. There is none like you. And when all else fades, you remain. Losing a child is awful. But in the midst of that storm, God did have a purpose. And he grew us, and he grew our faith, and he taught us to trust him through highs and lows that we had never experienced before. He was always there. He always had a plan. He always has a purpose for every storm that we go through. And so while it's still hard to go through them and our heart still breaks and it still hurts and all of that is fine, there's still an opportunity for us in every one of those storms to ask the right question, which is, what purpose do you have for me in this storm? Can we be humble enough and maybe brave enough to ask that question of the Lord? What purpose do you have for me in this storm? God's plan will call us to go through storms, but there's more. Look at verse 23. It says, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down the lake, and they were filling with water, and they were in danger. And they went, and they woke him, saying, Master, Master, we are perishing. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. Number two, God's plan will call me to give up control. God's plan will call me to give up control. So, interesting enough, as soon as they get in the boat, they start sailing, and it says he fell asleep, right? And evidently, he stayed asleep in the midst of this insanely intense storm, right? Now, I'm sure he had a long day of ministry that day, so he's probably worn out, but let's just be honest, like, that's some sound sleeping, right? Like, if you're, like, just chilling in the boat, sleeping while the waves are crashing over the side, like, but this was more than a nap. In the midst of the chaos, there's a picture here that Luke is painting for us, that right in the middle of the chaos, Jesus was calm. Jesus was at peace. The storm never worries him. It never spooks him. It never catches him off guard. He is always in control. He always has a plan. But in the midst of the storm, eventually they went and they woke him. Now, I'm just curious. I always try to, like, put myself, like, in the middle of these stories. Like, if I was there, like, what would I be thinking? I was just thinking, like, how long do you think it took before the disciples went and woke up Jesus? You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, how long did they try to handle that storm on their own before they broke? How long did they try to right the ship before they realized they couldn't do it? If they were anything like many of us, myself included, it was probably a while, right? Because I have this, like, insipid disease in my head. It's called, I got this. Does anybody else have that? Right? Like, I can do this. I can handle it. I just got to, like, buckle down a little harder. And you see, the disciples, they didn't go to Jesus until the storm was out of control. And they had no choice. And even then, I kind of bet it was an argument. Like, you wake him. No, I'm not going to wake him. You wake him. It was your idea. Like, I'm not. And then eventually, like, Peter busts through the crowd, right? He's like, fine, get out of the way. I'll do it. All right? He doesn't say that in this text. I'm just like, this is me. Like, I'm just thinking. But they finally wake up and they say, Master, Master. And the repeated address there in Scripture is for a purpose. It's showing the urgency and the high emotion and the emphatic tone in which they're speaking to Jesus. It's the opposite picture of what we just had of the napping Jesus. The disciples are not calm. They are not at peace at all. They're freaking out. Master, Master, we are perishing. This is it. It's all over. It's been nice. It's been a good run, Jesus, but we're going down. Over in Mark's version of the story, he even adds a little extra. It says, they woke him up and they said, do you not care that we are perishing? It wasn't just a question, it was an accusation. They assume that Jesus doesn't know what's happening, that he's messed up and he's led them into the storm, and now all hope is lost and it's all going to end right here. And they're saying, Jesus, what have you done to us? How could you let this happen? Don't you even care? Now, I do think that they wake Jesus here because at some level, they actually do believe in his power. Right? Like they think, like, we've tried everything we can do. Maybe Jesus can fix this. So they do have some level of faith, and they wake him because they do believe in his power, but they don't believe in his plan. And there's a difference there. This brings us to a really important distinction about God and his character that sometimes I think we miss, even as Christians, and that's the difference between God's sovereignty and God's providence. We oftentimes use those words interchangeably in the church, but they're actually two different concepts. God's sovereignty is God's right and power to do all that he desires. God's sovereignty is his right and his power to do all that he desires. This is what we mean when we say that he's an all-powerful God, right? He can do anything. He demonstrates that power, his sovereignty over all creation in the story when he wakes up and he rebukes the wind and the waves and they cease. That's God's sovereignty on display. But his providence is connected, but it's different. Providence is when he uses his sovereignty to accomplish his plan and his purposes. God's sovereignty is about power. God's providence is about plan and purposes. And God's providence is at play even while he's asleep in the boat. We're not seeing his sovereignty in that moment, but we are seeing his providence. He was controlling the storm. He was not going to let the boat go under. Even though the disciples didn't know that. And so the disciples here, their failure in this moment is not waking up Jesus. It's not asking for help. That was fine. There was no problem with that. Jesus is good with that. Their problem is how they did it. At some level, they believed that he could save them, but not that he would save them. After all, he's unconscious in a sinking ship. They believed in his sovereignty, but not in his providence. They didn't really believe that he was in control of all things. That's where their faith fell short. And I think that's oftentimes where our faith can fall short as well. We may believe that God can do something to help us, but will he? Or do we first have to do something to force his hand and prove ourselves and make him help us? Do we have to try our hardest first before we can ask? But that way of thinking is not the gospel of the Bible. In our day, popularly, that would be what we call the prosperity gospel. that goes something like this, that we're told if we just have enough faith, if we just have enough faith, God will never make us suffer physically or spiritually or especially financially, right? If we'll never have to experience another storm if we just pray enough and have enough faith. In other words, the ball's in our court, right? It's up to us. If I just muster up a strong enough faith, then all will be well. God is able to deliver us. Yes, we all say that. But the burden then is on me to actually make him do it through having enough faith. The only problem with that teaching is the Bible. Like the overarching message of the entire Bible. But let me give you one specific verse, Ephesians 2:8. For by grace you have been saved through faith. Check this. And this is not, everyone say not. This is not your own doing. It is the gift of God. First of all, faith is not something we manufacture. It's not something that we muster up. It's not something that we can create. It is a gift from God. Secondly, trying to use faith as a crowbar to try to pry blessings out of God's hands is a total and tragic misrepresentation of God's heart towards us. And when we think like that, it takes all the control out of his hands and it puts it back in our hands. If I just pray enough, if I just give enough, if I just walk in faith enough, then I can control the outcome of my life and God will have to bless me. Do you see the problem with this? Because that's not actually faith at all. At least not faith in God. That's faith in me. Faith in my works, in my abilities, in my faith, and that is the opposite of God's plan. God's ultimate plan and purpose is to come and to save people who can't save themselves. That's the gospel. That every single one of us is a sinner that has rebelled against God, that has failed in front of a holy and perfect God, have disobeyed his word, and we deserve death. We deserve wrath from him. And yet he loves us so much that his ultimate plan and purpose is to come down to earth, to be born as a man, live a perfect and sinless life, and then go to the cross and die in our place for our sins so that we can be saved. He endured the greatest storm anyone has ever endured so that his plan and purposes could be accomplished for us. And he went into the grave, and 3 days later, he rose back to life, proving that he was God and offering to save all who will believe in him. God's plan always leads us to greater dependence on him and on his grace, not on ourselves. You want to know God's plan for your life? It's for you to depend on him for everything. Every moment. And he will use whatever means necessary to help you do that. Faith is not about fighting for control, but resting in his control. Faith is not about me trying to control the outcomes of my life and the answers to my prayers. Faith is about me trusting and resting in the purpose and the plans of a perfect and good God. One last thing. Look at verse 25. And he said to them, "Where is your faith?" And they were afraid, and they marveled, saying to one another, "Who then is this that he commands even winds and water, and they obey him?" Number 3, last point, God's plan will call me to grow in my faith. God's plan will call me to grow in my faith. It's not about me mustering up more faith, but it's about Him growing me in the faith that He gives. He says to the disciples, he turns to him, he says, where is your faith? Now think about this again. Think about the story here. At this moment in time, you could literally hear a pin drop, right? The sea is now completely calm. The disciples are still soaking wet from the storm. The bottom of the boat is still full of water. Their hearts are still pounding out of their chests from the fear of what just happened. And Jesus drops this rhetorical question on them. That's really more of a statement than a question. He's saying to them, you should have had more faith in me. And to be fair, like I said earlier, they did have some faith, right? They did come to him for help. They had some faith, but they still lacked what we're going to call mature faith. And here's the striking difference between those who are growing in mature faith in Jesus and those who are still stuck in spiritual diapers. Faith in the works of Jesus versus faith in the character of Jesus. Faith in the works of Jesus means that some of us only have faith in Jesus because of what He has done for us. That's the first person. The second person, the mature faith person, but God is calling us to a faith that Jesus because of who He is. That's what mature faith looks like. Not just what He's done, but who He is. The first person always needs another miracle to keep their faith alive. Like, it only lasts for so long, and then eventually, God, you got to do something else for me now. The second person has faith even when the miracle doesn't come because they know He is good. The first person's faith only lasts until the next crisis hits. And then God has to do it again for them to believe. The second person's faith holds fast through the crisis and through the process and through the storm. Mature faith is anchored in the character of God, not just the works of God, and therefore it is unshaken by the storms of life. That's what Jesus is asking the disciples here. Where's your faith? Where's your mature faith in who I am? And their response is not to answer, probably smart in that moment. It just says that they were afraid and they marveled. First, they feared the storm, but now they fear the master of the storm. First, they were overcome by the power of the storm, but now they're overcome by the power of Jesus, and He is growing their faith through the experience. And they asked this question, who is this that even the winds and water obey Him? This guy has control even over nature, and it conforms to His plans and His purposes. You see, this miracle was different than His other miracles. All the other ones were amazing, but they were within the realm of things that man has some level of control over, right? Like, He had healed some sick people. He had cast out some demons. He had multiplied some food. But mankind throughout history has kind of had some control over those things. Like, we have doctors that can do healing things. We've got, you know, people who can cast out spiritual beings and such. We've got, you know, people who can create food for us and, like, there's all that's kind of like, yeah, that's great and that's amazing and you did it different than we do it, but we could kind of do some of that too. But what is the one area of creation that man has never been able to control or conquer? Nature. the weather. Right? We can predict it, kind of. We can prepare for it. We can kind of defend ourselves from it, but we, with all of our technology, with all of our advancement, with all of these years, we've never found a way to control it. Nature is not controlled by mortal hands. Only God has the power to do that. Psalm 89, 8 and 9 says, O Lord, God of hosts, who is mighty as you are, O Lord, with your faithfulness all around you, you rule the raging of the sea, and when its waves rise, you still them. Nothing is beyond his control, and therefore worthy of my faith. He is worthy, no matter the circumstances, no matter the chaos, no matter the storms that I come up against. Mature faith doesn't just trust God to get me out of the storm, but that he has a good plan for me in the storm. So often we're focused on just getting out of the storm, and rightly so. Right? Storms are terrible. We hate them. They're not fun. But sometimes we're so focused on getting out of the storm that we miss God's plan and purposes for us in the storm. Faith is trusting God's plan as much as his power. Does that truth characterize your faith today? Do you trust God and his plan for your life no matter what storms he takes you through? And if you're struggling with that today, I just want you to know that that's okay. He still loves you. He's still for you. He's still calling you. He doesn't cast you off just because your faith is weak. But your next step is simply this. Confess your lack of faith and ask him to grow that gift of faith in your life. Just like the father in the Gospels that comes to Jesus, he says, help my unbelief. Would we be bold enough to pray that to the Lord today? Lord, help me believe. Grow my faith. I know it's weak. I know it's not what it should be. I know I don't always believe in your perfect plan for my life. Grow my faith. Help my unbelief. You stand. Let's pray that God would make us a people of faith that trusts in him no matter what.